Hello, welcome to the Rebel Room. Ryan Green, Rob, the Wise Owl Mish, here to discuss UNLV 75, BYU 74, a one-point game that really turned into a close affair late. It was a close affair for a while, then it wasn't, then it was again. Lots to talk about with this one. We're going to get into all of it. Rob, where do you want to start? Because there's tons.
Wow, where do we start? This one game was a microcosm of this schizophrenetic season.
Schizophrenetic? Schizophrenic. But I like schizophrenetic better because it just makes even less.
We're establishing words here, but no less an authority.
We're not rocket surgeons here, right?
No, you know what? We got to just get way off tangent. You know, the great Princeton coach, Pete Carril, had a great line about that. You know, the typical line about that, you know, it's not rocket science, right? Well, he twisted it and said, he would always say, I'm not a rocket ship scientist.
It's been that kind of a season, and you're right. Saturday night at the Mac was a microcosm, and more people saw it than have at any point this year in the MAC, or in the past 16 seasons, for that matter. 18,523 tickets sold. We won't say that's how many fans were there, but that's how many tickets were sold. The first sellout crowd since January of 1993, when UNLV took on Georgetown.
Raleigh Massimino's first year after taking over for Tark was a 16-point victory, and you know, that was in an era. You know what, though?
Would that have been J.R. Wright?
I don't think so. We have so much on our mind right now that you just threw a curveball, and now my brain really feels like mashed potatoes.
Sorry.
But, you know, they had crowds of 19,000 until just before then, so I don't know if they had the fire marshal had to clear some space for a certain...
Not as much standing room.
Cheerleaders, maybe, yeah. It was a sellout tonight, but it wasn't 19,000, so that'll be a good follow-up for us to see if there ever could be a crowd of 19,000. If so, you might hear from Clark County officials, so that might not be a good thing. But let's go back to the frenetic pace of this game, and no less an authority than Lon Kruger highlighted the kind of the craziness, zaniness of this game, if not the season, when he talked about the disparity in both halves. UNLV led 23-21. At the half, and in the second half, BYU won 53-52. He said that it is very rare to have such two different extreme halves like that. And you know what? That's the season. You know, you don't know what you're getting. It's, you know, these guys are going to get up for games at BYU, at Louisville. And then you end up playing a TCU, Colorado State, and just completely playing down to their level. So, you don't know what you're getting, but it should be some excitement over the next few weeks.
Well, we had a good feeling that we'd probably see a pretty spirited performance from the Rebels, not only because of the loss on Wednesday in Laramie, but also because, I mean, I would imagine that's the natural reaction when you come out of the tunnel and there's 18,500 there. But first of all, before anything, let's give some credit to a man who we haven't given any credit to this year, and that would be one David Hall. We've talked about it a lot on this show about how we'll cringe when him and his crew show up. Five games they'd officiated already this season for the Rebels, an average of 39.4 personal fouls called during those games. Very, very whistle happy bunch they've proven to be. 51 fouls called at UTEP earlier this season, 44 against San Diego State in the overtime game at the MAC a few weeks back. Tonight, only 31 fouls called, 10 in the first half. So it was, you know, and keep in mind there were about 5-6 fouls there in the final 2 minutes out of desperation on BYU's part. They let the guys play and they treated the fans to a show.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, you're totally right about that. We've been pretty harsh on him and some of the decisions he and his crew have made this season, and it's just a slog effort that has been part of the games that they've directed. And you know, this was for the most part, this was kind of a let them play deal, and it was probably exciting to watch on TV at home, although you folks are probably all sitting on your hands because it got pretty nerve-wracking there the last 2 minutes. In the last 2:12, UNLV went 8 for 15 at the line, so there is much more work to be done.
Yeah, and the free throw line showing has been an issue on and off the season, especially in the last few games too.
Yeah, you know, that type of thing doesn't get solved overnight. So,
no. So there's no point. There's really not much of a point in worrying about it because either you're going to hit them or you're not.
Yeah, and you know what? We saw it was some interesting strategy because in my mind's eye, I don't recall how really that last 2 minutes played out as far as who BYU was trying to foul and in terms of were they doubling Kendall Wallace because he's by far the team's best free throw shooter. And he was on the court for a lot of that last couple minutes. And, you know, if I'm Lon Kruger, I want the ball in Kendall's hands because he is going to be a sure shot. And he never went to the line.
Yeah. Wink Adams instead got a lot of those trips. 9 of 14 yep. he was. However, scored 22 points. And, well, you know, we talked about that first half, 23-21, UNLV wins the first half. But this thing really got very interesting in the second half, and it all started about midway through with Kendall Wallace hitting the back-to-back three-pointers.
Yeah, but let's back up just a little bit, just so we can squeeze this in, you know, because I wrote about it, and it can't be downplayed. The very last play of the first half, Trey Willis was on the left wing, and he was very patient. He let the play develop, and all of a sudden, it parted like the Red Sea. A lane to Rougeau opened up, and Willis zipped it down there for an easy bucket with about, a second and a half left. You look back on that. What if it doesn't open up? Trey launches a three, misses. Well, that's two valuable points, so that can't be overlooked.
Yeah, great crisp overhead pass that was just a bullet. It had to get there fast too because that shot could have been blocked if it took any longer.
Absolutely, yeah. And Trey was really active tonight. He was very productive, and this feeds back into where you were leading because Wallace had his spurt, and then soon after that, Willis got his fourth foul. He spent time on the bench, and then another reserve player, Mo Rutledge, came in and did his role. We can't talk enough about Wallace and Rutledge tonight.
Well, let's start with Wallace. It's a 37-37 game with about just over 12 minutes left to play. He hits. He had gone 1 of 12 from three-point range his last five games. Missed two in the first half.
It was actually 1 for 14 because he missed his first two shots tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so. And after that second miss, you know, we pointed out he was running up the floor and he dropped his shoulders. His head kind of tilted down and he looked beaten. And, you know, he hits the one from the top. Where he gets knocked down as he's shooting it, and they go up 40-37. The next trip down the floor hits one from the left corner where he gets hit, knocked into the first round of the area formerly known as Gucci Row. And, you know, it's funny. I kind of asked him after the game. It's something that you see him happen in practice a lot, too. He shoots threes and gets knocked to the floor. And, you know, he was talking about how when you get in a shooting slump, you might think a lot. It's a lot like a hitting slump in baseball. And, you know, when you got a guy flying at you trying to block a shot and he had an attempt blocked in the first half, you just don't have time to think. And he really didn't have time to think. He said when that's the case, you get better lift on the shot because the only thing you are thinking about is getting it over the defender. So he didn't think, and he wound up turning it back on. This is a guy who went 5 of 9 at Air Force on January 31st and since then just really hadn't been himself off the bench.
It's too bad that this isn't the Olympics because as far as grade of difficulty, he would have gotten 4 points on one of those shots and 5 points on the other.
Yeah.
And then he lulled Kamard on the right side with a really sweet drive that sort of caught Kamard off balance. And it was right after that play where Lee Kamard was so, it frustrated that he slapped his hands, doggone it. And that was a sneaky 8 points by Wallace.
It'll catch just about anybody off guard because it was only his eighth two-point bucket of the season.
Right. And you know, Lee told me, I mean, he's a shooter. We know what Kendall does. He's a shooter, you know. So for him to take it in there showed some guts.
Yeah. And his game kind of flowed out of that. He had a nice offensive rebound tip to Rene Rougeau that went for 2 points. He also had when it was 68-62 late in the game, Kamard was driving on the baseline to try to make it a four-point game, knocked the ball loose from behind. Kamard regained it, but not in time to get a really good look as he thought he, as good a look as he thought he would at the bucket. He missed the layup. Wallace comes up with a defensive board and feeds it up to Wink Adams. So he did the little things, and he talked about the confidence for to do those things stemming from finally hitting some meaningful three-point shots.
And in his own shoes.
Yeah. Nothing that was crunching his toes into...
That was his last big effort at Air Force, of course, yeah. When he wore Scott Hoffman's size and a half, too short shoes.
When he forgot his back in Vegas. Well, you mentioned Mo Rutledge. Let's move on to him. That just continues to sizzle. 17 of 26 from three-point range in conference play. Was 2 of 3 tonight. He set a career high last Saturday in points with 12, and then this Saturday tops that with 13. And, also had 3 rebounds. He was tough inside all night.
We got a new nickname for him. Mo Saturday.
Mo Saturday.
He was tough. He didn't care who was on him. They had mismatches down low, and it was good to see them take advantage of a mismatch or two, because he was the obvious play, and he just snakes in there with his left-handed power hook, and that was savvy. But also, he took it in on Chris Miles, who had 8 inches on him. So he's one of those guys. He's a senior, no fear, and he's really an interesting guy. He's a guy of very few words, but when he talks, everybody listens, and so it's good to see him, especially on this stage, because we've talked about this before with the crowd.
Uh-huh.
That's been a big thing with him. It just isn't a natural thing for certain guys to come in and play before. Heck, I couldn't play before 10 people, much less 10,000, much less, 15,500? So this was a really good test for him to shine in this kind of hotbed. Mm-hmm. and not wilt, because he'll be the first to admit that last season was kind of tough playing before such big crowds. And so he's really providing some senior leadership.
And then another senior kind of took the baton from there. Wink Adams hit those 2 back-to-back threes of his own, and the second of which was huge because he hits the 3. Tavernary comes down and launches one of those quick release shots from the outside. He hits a 3.
Boy, Adams, he launches nothing but quick release. Oh, that's a fantastic shot.
He just wrist flicks him up there and gets it up there fast. And he was pure tonight. He had 19 points and was 5 of 9 from deep. But Adams comes right back and hits another, and really. It looked like UNLV was going to cruise to the finish. Of course, we already hit on the fact that it was a little closer than maybe some people would have liked, but,
especially if you were one of those persons holding a UNLV ticket -2. Ooh, that, my friend, is why I don't gamble.
Exactly.
Yeah. There must have been a lot of people on pins and needles there at the end, because they frittered away a pretty good lead there. But, we can fast forward to the very final play of the game. Lee Cummard comes down. He hits the 3.
After Belfield hits 1 of 2, which was all he really needed to
exactly.
do. He missed the first one, and you could kind of sense the...
This better go in.
Yeah, you could sense the tension in the crowd at that point.
Yep.
He hits the second, and there was a collective... I felt the breath on the back of my neck from the collective sigh of relief.
Are you sure that wasn't Sarah Cummard? We'll get to Sarah. Who sang that song? Sarah. Who sang that song?
I don't know.
Styx, Journey, one of those.
I know Hall & Oates sang Sarah Smile.
Okay, we'll get to that.
Okay.
Kasem on Billboard Top 40. So Lee Cummard comes down, and of course he hits the 3 to make it a 1-point game. Mo Rutledge takes the ball out of the net. He hands it to Rougeau, and there's a frantic few moments. And all of a sudden, Rougeau sees Wink sprinting down court on the right side. Rougeau lobs him the two-handed half-court pass. Wink catches it like a wide receiver. And for a flash, there's a flash moment where he gets control of the ball. He looks up at the rim, and you think. And we heard some people, some pockets of fans,
of gamblers.
You could hear, well, not only but there was enough fans who probably realized that Wink has never dunked as a Rebel. And that's kind of what I sensed and felt, is that people were kind of starting to rise up and, oh, is this it? And on the replay, you can see this on our videos, that Wink looks up for a second, and then he hears his teammates dribble out the clock, bleed the clock. And that's what he does. He then power dribbles into the lane, cuts out on the left wing, and game over. Mm. So, but for a flash, we almost saw the very first wink dunk. I think he's saving it for Mama Wink, senior night, Air Force, March 4.
And more than likely, he'll have a chance against that team.
Ooh, yeah. You dug up some good figures about Air Force.
0-13. They lost today at home to Colorado State. That Colorado State had lost 19 straight road conference games, but it's not looking good for Air Force in terms of getting a win in conference play. They got BYU, UNLV, and Wyoming left on the schedule.
Yep, that's going to be rough. A second consecutive winless team in the league, and yet we talked about this earlier, but I wonder how many other leagues can talk about back-to-back winless teams, different teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very odd, I think. I think it's very strange. I think that's extremely rare.
Especially with Air Force, considering how good they were just a couple of years ago.
Yep.
But anyway, let's before we kind of spin forward, before we do that, let's hear what some of the guys had to say after tonight's game. Lon Kruger, Wink Adams, Kendall Wallace here were some of their thoughts afterwards tonight.
Well, great, great battle from start to finish. Early on in the ball game, points were awfully tough to come by. I thought defensively both teams had it pretty well measured, and then to see it flip almost entirely in the second half and have a lot of pace to it, and both teams making some shots. It's kind of rare to see two different extremes style-wise in one ball game. But really proud of our guys. BYU's really playing well, and Dave's done such a good job, and they're an outstanding club. So to hang in there early and then get a little bit of a margin in the second half and then make just enough free throws down the stretch to pull it out, proud of our guys. I'll talk about the makes. You know, they gave us a one-point win. But obviously, keep in mind, it would have looked like we made a lot more free throws if they didn't bank a three in and throw one in at the last. So, but again, credit BYU for doing that. I think tonight it felt like we were starting to get a little better rhythm at the line. Wink looked more comfortable even though he missed a few. Oscar's been shooting them well. Everyone else shot him well. So I think we feel good about getting ready to turn the corner at the line. Mo was great. Kendall was great. I thought both came in there and did really a good job. Mo making big plays. Kendall, knocking down back-to-back threes to create that margin, really, that we played with the rest of the way. I thought they were outstanding. Joe looked very comfortable shooting the ball, and it was good to see Wink a little bit more aggressive and jumping up there and knocking down a few, too. I thought we had a lot more attack offensively. The first half, I thought we were pretty timid, tentative. I thought the second half we had, took advantage of getting into some seams and into some gaps and making plays and then knocking down shots, which you have to do to finish. But again, BYU was more aggressive offensively too. We've had, a run of games where it looks like that. I don't know that there's an answer for it. We're on the road at Wyoming and don't play with the fire and energy that you have to at that point in the season, and Wyoming's very good at home, so it's not like that's an easy ball game at all, and we've got to play much better in that situation. Great crowd. Yeah, great crowd. Crowd's been outstanding. This crowd was there early and really into it, and good sportsmanship, really supportive and provided energy, but yet I thought handled it in a very, very positive, constructive way.
Second half, my teammates told me I just need to be aggressive, and I was glad I was able to hit some shots. Wish I could hit some more free throws at the end, but it's something I've been working on. Very big, it's a tough team to play, even if they play, so I hear. Whenever we play them, it's always a dogfight, so, tonight was a big game, coming off a loss. Usually when we lose a game, we always lose two games in a row. That's how we've been doing this season, so it's real good to kind of change that and win tonight.
It's a good bounce back for us to after that tough loss over there at Wyoming, come back here and win in front of 18,000 here. It's a great feeling.
I think it might have. It felt good to get a couple to go down. I was starting to get a little frustrated, but I can't do that. Shooters just keep shooting. After you miss that first one, you got to think you're going to make the next one. So I got to go out there with that mentality and just keep making shots. Yeah, I've been a little frustrated by the last couple games, and I haven't been shooting the ball too well. But I just got to come out and keep playing hard, and shots will start falling.
I think once you get a bucket to go, you just get a little more confidence, and the rest of the game just comes to you, and it becomes a lot easier. It kind of lifts the pressure off you're kind of feeling, and it definitely helps, that's for sure. I've had a lot. That Arizona game was a pretty big rush, but that one definitely felt good to beat BYU, you know, and I was able to contribute like I was. It helped a lot.
All right. Well, before we spin it forward, you know, something that was kind of popular to be talked about after the game was kind of that, you know, we talked about it earlier too, that the, you know, you compare the team that came out on the floor in Laramie Wednesday night, intensity wise, you know, fire, attack, all that stuff, compared to the team that played Saturday, and the inconsistency of it. And at this point in the season, it's no surprise. You know, it's happened so many times that it's really of no surprise. But, you know, now you look at the rest of this team's season, what kind of opportunities are there going to be for them to come out in a game with no fire? You look at the two road games that are left at Utah, at San Diego State. Those are both going to be pretty rough atmospheres where there'll be a lot of energy. And then the one remaining home game, you know, yeah, it's against a winless conference team, but it's senior night. It's going to be a big night. You know, maybe the Rebels are lucky with the situations they're going to be put in the rest of the season.
Wow. It's a conundrum, you know. It's such a weird, different season, and I think Kruger would be the first one to tell you that. You know, we've hit on that before also, that this has been a perplexing team. But you know what's funny is that in theory, this team came out tonight and played so much more better and aggressively and blah, blah, blah. Well, it was a one-point win,
yeah.
You know. They make one less shot. BYU makes one more shot, and we're talking about a different story. Mm-hmm. You know, it is amazing, and I've touched on this
with
Kruger,
line.
The slim margin of how you feel good about yourself and feel bad about yourself. There was nothing fantastic about tonight. In fact, look at that start. For the first 5 minutes, what? It was a 4-2 game. Mm-hmm. So both teams kind of came out, you know, like a boxer feeling each other out. It was sluggish, mm-hmm. You know, And for UNLV, there was some fortune that went their way. They, you know, fortunately, the bench really gave them that lead, that cushion that they absolutely needed toward the end. So, I understand that there's patterns developing. I understand that free throws are an issue, will be an issue. But, man, it's just a game-to-game thing that it's just tough to put your finger on. It's going to be different each game. They need to ride some hot hands.
Well, that said, what do you expect on Wednesday at Utah? Probably the toughest game remaining on UNLV's schedule.
This is going to be extremely interesting because we saw Utah take a very good lead on the Rebels at the MAC, and then they switched some gears. And remember, Darger played Neville and took him out on the perimeter. Utah did not have an answer for that. I'm going to be real interested to see if Coach Jim Boylan in the last few weeks has installed some sort of zone, because that's going to thwart them just being confused with Neville playing 20 feet out and not knowing which way to turn or what to do, because that's what we saw. We saw a confused 7-foot-1 center last time they played here, and that led to their downfall. So is Boylan going to give in and actually play a zone to keep him perched down below, you know, by the rim where he is strongest? That's what I'm going to be looking at.
Can't say it any better. Really can't. Well, before we get out of here, any final words you have for Sarah Kamard if she happens to be listening?
Oh, shoot, yeah. Why didn't we talk about Sarah yet? I talked to Lee afterward, and it was a real interesting brief conversation because he was talking about the fantastic crowd, fantastic UNLV fans, and so fun and playing.
Who were chanting Psycho Sarah.
I'm getting to that.
Yeah.
Why'd you cut me off? I'm getting to that.
Because I'm tired and it's late.
Yeah. But don't be cutting me off.
Okay, good.
It is too late. So we're just talking about the fans and the crowd, and he's loving it, and it's a great atmosphere and environment. He wasn't smiling, but, you know, that's going to lead us to one other quick thing after we talk about this. But then I asked him, did you hear the chant? Early in this, 20 seconds into the second half, he's shooting free throws. And right before the first one, the student section mostly is pretty loud, chanting "Psycho Sarah." Well, that stems from the Mountain West title game last spring when UNLV beat BYU for a second consecutive season to get the NCAA tournament berth, and then there was some mayhem. She was at the center of a storm or two. Words were exchanged, and even supposedly more than words. So Sarah Cummard will live in the history books of mayhem at the Thomas and Mack Center. Lee is, of course, a senior, so we got another Mountain West tournament coming up here. So the fans obviously did not forget last season, and so Lee steps to the line, "Psycho Sarah." He hits a free throw. He misses a free throw. So I asked him if he heard that chant. He said, "Yes, I did." And then I said, "What'd you think?" And he kind of kept his head down, and he said, "Well, I hit two at the end." So he did. He had another chance to go to the line late in the game, and he made both free throws. So, but to just go off on one little quick tangent, we were talking to assorted Cougars after the game, and they were all real classy, really professional.
They deserve some credit for that.
They deserve a lot of credit because some other players could use that as a model, you know. Mm-hmm. I won't name names. We don't have to. But there are several Rebels who, after a loss, it seems like all three of their dogs just died. Mm-hmm. So hats off to the Cougars for how they handle losses. And you really wouldn't know if they had won or lost.
Yeah.
And that's a tribute.
It's a sign of a pretty mature team.
Absolutely. And it's a tribute to them and their coach and how they handle things.
Well, anything else? Hey, you know what? If Lee Kamard makes 2 of 2 the first time, tie ball game. Think of it that way.
No doubt.
That's the rocket surgeon in me talking.
Boy, you are a genuine rocket ship scientist.
Didn't go to college for nothing.
To the moon.
Well, for the wise owl, this is Ryan Green. We will talk to you guys from Salt Lake City, the final trip to Utah this season, Wednesday night. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you then.